Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is the Faith Radio Network. Bill Meyer here. It's nice to have you as we get closer and closer to the big day. Well, after this election, it's so clear that our nation is very deeply divided on a variety of political and social issues. And Dr. Bruce Ashford says part of the answer may lie in an unlikely place, a solution to this problem, and that is weakness. Bruce is the provost and professor of theology and culture at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. He's the co-author of the book One Nation Under God, A Christian Hope for American Politics. Bruce, good morning. Welcome back to Faith Radio.
Dr. Meyer, it's great to be back on the show. Thank you for having me.
So let's begin with a quick look at a kind of an assessment of where we are right now. It seems like our culture is moving farther and farther away from God. Followers of Christ are feeling more and more marginalized, even persecuted at times. As you kind of take the 30,000 foot level, Bruce, and you observe where we are today at the state of our nation, what are some of the biggest challenges that you see ahead for the church and for individual believers?
Yeah, so, you know, election aside for just a moment, everybody's attention is on the election. But election aside, conservative evangelical Christians have seen sort of consistent setbacks, I think, for 30 or 40 years. Not entirely setbacks. We've seen a little bit of progress on pro-life issues. But on the whole, we are seeing slow incremental losses in religious liberty, human dignity, race relations, gender, sexuality, I mean, all of these things. And so we find ourselves, you know, as I often say, in a position of weakness, temporary weakness. You're never in a real position of weakness when Christ is Lord, but in a position of temporary weakness, and I think that's okay, and it provides us a perfect opportunity for a powerful witness.
So how can we, as followers of Jesus Christ, how can we impact a culture that increasingly wants to marginalize us and say our opinion doesn't matter? In fact, our opinion, in many cases, they believe is even dangerous.
Yeah, you know, just very quickly, there was a brilliant American sociologist, Jewish sociologist, he's dead now, who argued that Western culture, and especially the United States of America, is in the midst of an unprecedented attempt to build a society without a God underlying it. And the way he put it is that all cultures everywhere have understood that sacred order underlies social order. But that what's happening is people with cultural power in the United States are trying to rip sacred order out from underneath social order, and he said that the results of that would be awful. And so it's our job, I think, to give witness to why this project is not going to go well, and to give witness in a way that's compelling, for us not to be, you know, angry hornets and people who come in and smash the China shop and try to bully our way around in the social, cultural, and political arena. We've got to be winsome. I've got four categories in my mind. A few minutes just to list the categories.
You have a lot of time, Bruce. We love to hear. Always love to hear your thoughts. So yes, go ahead.
Let's start with two categories. One manner of giving powerful witness is to gather for a once a week political assembly, and that is church, local church, because when we gather and together confess that Jesus is Lord, the implication is that Caesar is not. Occupants to Caesar's throne come and go, but Jesus remains forever. You know, Congress comes and goes, presidencies come and go, Supreme Court justices come and go, but Jesus remains forever. And that is a powerful witness. And the U.S. gives us freedom of assembly and a pretty good amount of freedom of religion, and we need to hang on to that. Then when we leave the church assembled, you know, when the church scatters, when we go about our week, Monday through Saturday, I think there are four things we need to do. We need to recenter God. I think our public witness has actually decentered God. And we need to put him back at the forefront instead of putting ourselves at the forefront. We need to recenter God and decenter self. And then we need to learn how to reframe public issues and not use the secular framing that's given to us by MSNBC or Fox News.
You know,
frame issues in our own way.
I want to get into that in specific in just a bit, because I think that is so key, reframing those issues. And then you mentioned a couple of others that you, in an article you recently wrote. One is revitalize our cultural institutions. Can you flesh that out for us?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things we're going to need to do, sacred order always uses cultural products and cultural institutions to shape social order. And what I mean by that is that what we believe about God affects the way we build governments and courts and schools and businesses. And those cultural institutions then shape people. And we need to be willing to do the hard work of encouraging our young people to go into law and government and teaching and business and art and science, and to do so in distinctively Christian manners. And when we do that, we're able to help revitalize culture. And when we do it, we've got to, as I always put it, we've got to play the long game and take the broad view. So playing the long game means that when we want to shape culture, we can't put all of our eggs in the basket of short-term political activism. If we do that, we're going to lose. We might get some temporary victories, but we lose in the long run. And usually we just become viewed as angry political activists. And, you know, God's church is reduced to the special interest arm of whatever political party we're, you know, sort of working for at the moment. So we're going to play the long game and do what's going to benefit us in the long run. Then number two, take the broad view. So instead of putting our focus just on politics, we need to have a powerful Christian witness in the sciences, in the arts, with our families, in all of these different spheres of culture, and that's going to require pastors making application in their sermons to these sorts of vocations, placing significance on these vocations, telling young people that you can go into these vocations, go into them as Christians, and for the purpose of witness. And I think when we do that, we have so much more plausibility that you have these, you know, instead of just one point of light or point of witness in the political realm, you've got 100 points of light, you know, when you have believers in public universities as professors and lawyers and teachers and in the service industry all giving witness, then the combined witness is pretty powerful. Does that make sense?
It does. In order for this to happen, I think a big key is integration, being able to integrate these various disciplines with the biblical worldview. Unfortunately, my perspective is we haven't been doing a very good job of that. We haven't been doing a very good job as parents. We haven't been doing a very good job as Sunday school teachers and church leaders. We still have this, in my opinion, we still have this sacred secular split that we have bought into. And for our young people to go in these professions and do the things we're talking about, we have to start early and we have to do it often. It has to be an ongoing conversation. And if we're spending, I've mentioned this stat before, if we're spending 49 hours a week in front of a television in our homes, and unfortunately many Christians are doing that as well, and watching a lot of mindless goo, we're not going to see this happen.
Yeah, you know, I think the family is key. I've got three questions that I normally give parents so they can help their children learn to integrate their faith into the subjects they study at school. And eventually those subjects are the sort of things that you might study in college or do for a vocation. To try to, you know, equip parents, because parents feel at a loss sometimes. They want to help their children, but none of us were equipped. You know, so the three questions that I give are this. The first one is, what is God's creational design for this area of study or this type of activity? What would God intend, you know, for a doctor to do or be? What would God intend for a teacher to do or be, or a historian or a biologist? The second question is, how has that area of study or that activity, how has it been corrupted by sin or by idolatry? I can explain that word idolatry if we want to. How has it been corrupted? In other words, how have God's intentions gone badly or gone wrongly? And then third is, how can I
redeem it?
Or redirection, how can I redeem it? And those questions are simple to ask, but they're pretty difficult to answer.
Well, that's
least if we're teaching our children to ask the question, then it's in their mind that they need to.
Great place to start, Bruce. I appreciate that so much. And it does behoove us as moms and dads and certainly as youth leaders to approach these very important issues. We're talking to Bruce Ashford. He is a provost and professor of theology and culture at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. We'll take a quick break and be right back here on Faith Radio. Welcome back. 19 past the hour. This is the Faith Radio Network. It's Bill Meyer with Dr. Bruce Ashford. He is the co-author of the book One Nation Under God, A Christian Hope for American Politics. He's also a provost and professor of theology and culture at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. Bruce, it's kind of ironic if you think about it. Evangelicals, you know, many of those in the power positions in our culture have said, you know, we really don't have any influence anymore. And yet the media is crediting us with Donald Trump's victory and also the wins in the Congress. But instead of gloating over the conservative victory, can you explain why you believe we should actually be witnessing through our weakness at this point in our nation's history?
Yeah, you know, when Jesus, this is how the kingdom comes. When Jesus came and proclaimed the kingdom, he proclaimed it as a homeless, itinerant preacher.
Mm.
He had no place to lay his head. He was hung naked on a cross, crucified and buried in the ground. And that's how his victory came. And if you look at church history, if you go, you know, over the past 2,000 years, many, and probably most of the times that Christians have seen great advances, it's been when we were in a position of weakness. And so we can be comfortable in a position of weakness. If we have the courts against us, if we have many or most of the professors at public universities against us, sort of mocking us and belittling us and saying that we're the kind of people who cling to our God and our guns. You know, when these sort of things happen to us, we can just embrace it. Because God takes our weakness and he makes it powerful. You know, when he appeared to his disciples and said, as the Father sent me, so I send you, he showed them the holes in his hands and his side.
Mm.
And what he was saying is, just as the Father sent me and I had to suffer to get my victory, so I send you and you're going to have to suffer. Jesus said, all who desire to follow me will be persecuted. Paul said, all who desire you know, to follow Christ Jesus will be persecuted. And so we ought to expect it and not always play the victim, you know, and act like we're being persecuted, but just to embrace it. And when we embrace it, I think we serve, we point people back to Jesus, and we point people back to the way of the cross, and it keeps us from being arrogant, you know.
What does that look like, Bruce, on a daily basis, just from a practical perspective? I mean, we're not going to be flogged in the public square, hopefully.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not going to be burned at the stake or stuck on Nero's pikes. Tell us, what are some ways that just through our daily life, through our work life, through our school involvement, that we can show our dedication to Christ through our weakness?
Yeah, think about the way a missionary does it. When a Christian missionary goes to another land, so if I'm a missionary and I go to another people group, I go in as a minority. I have very little social or cultural power whatsoever. I don't even know the language. So in humility, I go and I learn the language, and it's very hard. But I learn the language as a way of saying to the people, I care about you, I respect you, I want to listen to you. When I enter into conversations with people as a missionary, and I was a missionary for 2 years, when you enter into conversations with them, you're listening. You want to figure out how it is that they think. You want to hear their heart, and then you want to find the best way to interface the gospel with their heart. You want to find a best way to interface the gospel with their cultural institutions. So if we translate that back to the United States, I don't think we tend to view ourselves as missionaries. We tend to view ourselves as kings.
Mm.
We want to yell at the people who aren't doing things right and rebuke them and shout them down. You know, we want to do it like the cable news network's pundits do to the people on the other side of the aisle. And like some radio hosts, not Dr. Bill Meyer, but other radio hosts, you know,
thanks, Bruce.
Yelling and sweating and screaming.
That was yesterday. That was yesterday.
Oh, yesterday. But today, you know, you're fine.
Right.
You had your coffee.
Okay.
But yeah, we want to listen to people in our society. We want to pay close attention to our cultural institutions and interface the gospel with humility rather than with anger and condescension.
Mm, very well said. Now, before the break, you talked about reframing issues, and there are a lot, and you address many of them in your book, One Nation Under God. But let's just talk about a few of the hot-button issues and how we should reframe them so that the non-Christian can hear our voice and hear our perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know which issue you want to take. I just published an article recently on immigration, and I've got a couple things I can say that I think all of us will agree on, and then I'll try to apply those things, and we might agree or disagree on those. But, you know, the Bible gives two principles that I think apply to the immigration issue. One is justice, and the other is mercy. And I think there's a way we can bring a posture of just mercy to the immigration question. And so justice, as I see it, means that it is absolutely right for a country to secure its borders and enforce its laws. That's what justice is. And justice, when a government upholds justice, is a way of pointing towards God's justice. But we can uphold those laws in a way that is merciful. And so there are some ways that we can enforce our immigration laws that don't unnecessarily tear families apart, that don't impose harsher than necessary penalties. So that's a way of reframing issues in relation to immigration. If you want to take power, subject to power for a moment, both political parties, Republicans and Democrats, when they come into office, when a president comes into office, it's been said for the past four presidencies, the president comes in and says, I've got a mandate from the people. And what that often means is, I got 51% of the vote, or in this case, 48% or 49, and that gives me a mandate to enact a tyranny of the majority for 4 years. And so I think it's a problem with both parties. But what we want to do instead of that is to use our power to sort of decenter ourselves and empower others. And so I think when a political party comes into power, it needs to bend over backwards to actually serve the people on the other side of the aisle. Doesn't mean we have to capitulate to their ideas. We shouldn't capitulate to their ideas. But we view our power differently. We use our power to serve, not to lord it over.
Boy, what a concept, Bruce. I love that. Sounds a lot like something our founders would have said. Dr. Bruce Ashford, thank you so much for your time this morning, for your great insights. I want to recommend your website to folks to just get some great insight, BruceAshford.net. And once again, Bruce has this fantastic book out, which has been out. When did the book come out? About a year ago or so?
About a year ago.
Yeah, it's called One Nation Under God, A Christian Hope for American Politics. Bruce Ashford and his co-author. Bruce, thanks so much for your time. May the Lord bless you and have a Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Dr. Meyer. Blessings to you, too.